Welcome everybody to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. And once again, this is our Fun Drive Spectacular here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio. We've been doing our Fun Drive now since the Thursday before last, so we are just approaching end line here of the third annual CITR Fun Drive. And our goal this year was to raise $15,000, and we're almost there. We are currently at $14,037.68. So thank you everybody who has donated thus far. And I kind of find it very cool. I was here answering the phone one day, and we are trying to figure out, and I got no problem with it, how it got to 8 cents. Because that's just a funky little number. Somebody gave like something and 3 cents. Because we found the one, I believe, where somebody gave something and a nickel. Or maybe something and 3 cents. I can't remember. We found one of them. Somebody either gave 3 cents or 5 cents with the end at the end of their number. But we never found the other one. But, you know, that's pretty neat. Anyways, folks, you are listening to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Lots to get to on the show today. We, of course, will be doing a little Grey Cup talk. It'll be Julio Caravata from the BC Lions Radio Network. He was actually in Montreal covering the Grey Cup for Sportsnet. So he'll be with us right after the break. UBC men's basketball, big weekend for them. They swept Simon Fraser. We're going to have Vern Knopp, assistant coach from that team, will be with us. And then we'll get into some NFL talk at the end of the hour. BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas, he'll be with us at about 5:35. Also, lots to get into. Roberto Luongo out week to week. What is week to week? I don't really know. His agent says with that little pulled groin, he'll be out for 4 to 5 weeks. And we're also hearing week to week. I don't know. Does he have? I don't know. So we'll get into that. And Brian Burke, looks like this has finally gone down. Looks like Brian Burke will be, in fact, signing with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So been kind of waiting for that for a really long time, and it looks like it finally did go down. So, yeah, there you have it there. Anyways, folks, we are going to take a break. And once again, it is our Fun Drive here at CITR and, you know, Wiener's Barbecue. And I'm very proud to say I got my big donation. Somebody donated last week, and I actually have more than almost tripled what I raised last year, which is kind of strange because I'm pretty much doing the same show as I did this time last year. But nonetheless, thank you so much for whoever it was who donated. And here's what we're going to do. Got the thing going on. Whoever does the biggest donation gets a signed Jean Beliveau photo. So I'll be getting that this weekend because Jean Beliveau is actually coming to the city of Vancouver to do a signing this weekend. So Sunday at, I believe it's the Croatian Cultural Center. So check it out at Bosa.com, Bosasports.com. I should have been on that, but I'm not. And I'll also add, though, the first person to call in with a donation today during my show, first person to call in during the next hour 20 will get a signed Yvan Cournoyer, the Hall of Fame Montreal Canadian. You will get a signed Yvan Cournoyer photo. So there you do have it. And once again, the numbers to call, 822-8648, 822-8648. We very rarely do a fund drive. We do one once a year for 2 weeks. We're trying to raise $15,000. We're a non-commercial radio station. Just give us a shout, 822-8648, 822-8648. Our goal is $15,000. We're at $14,037.68, so we're not that far away. It's actually quite impressive. I believe we've set a record here. I believe the most we've ever done is somewhere in the 13,000 range 2 years ago. Last year, I don't think we hit the 10, but we're over 14 now. So let's keep it going here at 101.9 FM. And I know Mike from Flex Your Head, he's on after me. I think we're tied, or he's beating me by not by much right now. So that's kind of the goal I have, is to at least hang in there with Mike. So give us a call up, okay? 822-8648. You know what? When I do this Fun Drive Pitch. I'm always kind of thinking of, I'm a big fan of PBS, okay? You know, I'll watch a lot of PBS. I'm a huge fan of the Antiques Roadshow. Big fan of the Canadian Antiques Roadshow when it came to town to, I believe it was in Richmond, in North Steveston somewhere. Hey, what a fantastic area. And I went with my friend Derek Andrew. We had a blast. But this is one thing where the Americans have us beat 10 times over, 100 times over, 1,000 times over, infinite times over. Our roadshow, because we go by the British model, which is just stupid. I can't stand that show. The American Antiques Roadshow is just a fantastic show. And that's on PBS. That's my point. I'll watch that show. I don't know if you ever see American Experience. I'm into that. Ken Burns' Baseball, obviously. Well, fantastic. And yeah, I watched another thing on like Bob Dylan the other day, and there was something on about Nazis stealing Jewish European art in World War II, or just looting museums in general, called The Rape of Europa. I think that was on yesterday, but I watched Monday Night Football instead. But there's so many great shows on PBS, and I'm trying always what I remember hearing what they say during their Fun Drive pitches. I'm trying to like do it like that. That's sort of the example I have. I don't think I'm very good at it, but we trudge on. Anyways, if you want to donate, 822-8648, 822-8648. Lots of great prizes. CATR has thrown in there. And just give us a call up, and they will tell you. You can get a tax receipt for $30 or more. Come on, that's a pretty good thing right there. So give us a call up at 822-8648, 822-8648. And, help support the CITR Fund Drive. I would say that, you know, we're just bumbling along. Help us out here. But we're almost there. We are almost there. We've got 2 days and a bit left, okay? And we're at $14,037.68. Help us out. Give us a call up, 822-8648, 822-8648, and we're that close to 15,000, okay? So give us a call up, 822-8648, 822-8648. All donations are welcome. Call up, give us $6. Give us $5. I'd say give us coupons, but I don't think we're accepting coupons as part of our financial situation. Anyways, this is all going into the station. We need a new server. I don't know what that means. It helps our podcast out. A new mixing board. I'm sure it'll go into turntables, parking passes, lavish lunches. No, I'm joking. Anyways, we're going to take a break here on 101.9 FM. But in the meantime, pick up the phone, dial us up, 822-8648, and help us out on our funding drive. When we're back, we are going to be talking a little Coupe de Grey, a little Grey Cup. It'll be Julio Caravata from the BC Lions Radio Network making perhaps his final appearance on the show. I'm sure this year, but, you know, don't know when Julio will be back. He always comes on, talk Lions, and yeah, we'll see. So we'll talk a little Lions, and we'll talk a little Grey Cup. You're listening to 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada. The show is Wiener's Barbecue, and once again, give us a call up, 822-8648, 822-8648, and please donate to our fund drive. Okay, that's it.
First thing I remember was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream going up the ride on a freight train within town, not knowing where I'm bound. No one could change my mind but Mama tried. One and only rebel child from a family meek and mild, my mama seemed to know what lay in store. Despite all my Sunday learning, over the bad I kept on turning, till Mama couldn't hold me anymore. I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried, Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better. But her pleading I denied, that leaves only me to blame, cause Mama tried. Thank you. Dear old daddy, rest his soul, left my mom a heavy load. She tried so very hard to fit his shoes. Working hours without rest, wanted me to have the best. She tried to raise me right, but I refused. I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. One would steer me right, but mama tried, mama tried, mama tried to raise me better. But her pleading I denied, leaves only me to blame, 'cause mama tried.
Welcome back to Winner's Barbecue here on 101.9 of MCATR Radio. And with us on the line right now from your lovely home. You're at home.
Finally.
You're at home. Julio Caravata from the BC Lions Radio Network. Julio, did you notice who was singing that song there to intro you today?
It wasn't George Strait.
Merle Haggard.
Merle Haggard, yeah.
Merle Haggard.
My little girl was running around, so I didn't really get a chance to really kind of I heard the country, though.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate. I like my country music.
Are you a country? Because that's what I always play for you. Are you a country music
guy?
Yeah,
I do. Yeah, I enjoy it. I was really into it in college, and, you know, have kind of, well, listen, I'm into nursery rhymes and the Berenstain Bears and Dora the Explorer these days, but in a previous life, I used to like it.
I was watching a movie the other day, Julio. I believe it was The Night Before Last, okay? It's called Strangers with Liv Tyler. Have you heard of this one? It's a horror movie. No? Okay. Anyways, it made about $50 million in theaters, and it cost under $10 million to make. So it was one of those, like, surprise hits.
Yeah.
And in one of the freaky parts, they were playing that song.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was good, actually. It was really good. I am still...
I wish I got a chance to see as many movies as you and Rick. Between the two of you.
I do better than him, let me tell you. But,
yeah.
But you guys work.
As you should.
Yeah, exactly. With us right now, Julio Caravata from the BC Lions Radio Network. But Julio, you were working for Sportsnet, so let's introduce you as that, covering the Grey Cup for them. What I got to know, Julio, with the Grey Cup, because, you know, obviously, you know, BC wasn't in it, but Montreal, that's where it was. Pretty much. It wasn't a sold-out stadium, or was it sold out? It seemed like...
No, it wasn't sold out, but it was pretty, you know, pretty darn close. You know, it was, I think it was 66,315 or something like that.
Wow.
And I think its capacity is, what is its capacity?
Probably 68
or something. 68 something. Yeah. And that would have broken a record.
Right. What was it like, though, in Montreal on the Grey Cup, Julio, leading up to the game? What was the city like?
Well, the city there, you know, on a good day, is a buzz. You know, anybody who's ever been to Montreal, it's a very, very, you know, cosmopolitan city. It's, you know, full of life. There's, you know, huge nightlife. You know, lots of, you know, places to eat and places to go out and have drinks and cafes and very European. So anyways, you know, it's normally buzzing anyways, but with the Grey Cup being there, it was a real sense of, you know, something big was going on. And, you know, the one thing that still astounds me, Daryl, is that, you know, no matter, you know, how many Grey Cups I've been to, and I've been to quite a few now, the thing that still amazes me is that it's the people that make it so good. Like the stories of guys and girls that make the pilgrimage to wherever the game is extraordinary. You know, there's guys that have been going with the same group of guys for 35, 40 years. They haven't missed a Grey Cup. You know, every year, whether they live in Kelowna or Winnipeg or Saskatchewan, they all get together and, you know, go to the game. And that's what, you know, makes this thing so great, is it's the people that show up year in and year out, regardless of who's in the game, just to get together and have an excuse to party. It's it's unbelievable.
That's pretty sweet. And the game itself, Julio, Calgary 22, Montreal 14, went down to the very end. It was actually kind of a strange finish, I thought. I was watching it, and you're waiting for Montreal to get that one last playoff, maybe the Hail Mary into the end zone, but the clock ran out. But still, it was a great Grey Cup, and I thought very similar in kind of a way, and the announcers were talking about it on TSN, in that they were saying in the first half, Calgary sort of got outplayed in the first half, but they hung in there, very similar to the Western Conference final, and then took it to them in the second half.
Yeah, I got that sense, too. I got that sense as well, that it was very much like the Lions in the fact that Montreal came out early, had some success, but again, that Calgary defense, you got to give them credit because they played that bend but don't break, you know, philosophy all year. You know, they gave up the fewest points. They were, you know, they had the fewest rushing TDs, fewest passing TDs. They really did a tremendous job of, you know, giving up some plays, but just not giving up the big play in the end zone. And just think to yourself, if the Lions or if the Alouettes could have punched in any one of those opportunities early, it just changes the complexion of the game. Like I think about that first drive. They went down and, you know, they moved the ball really well, got the crowd into it, and boom, 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 and all of a sudden, bang, they're right down by the, you know, the 10 or 11 yard line, and now they're, you know, they don't score. So now it's 3 points. You put a touchdown on there. Now just think of the difference in the mentality of the Alouettes and what it does to that crowd and what it does, more importantly, to the Calgary Stampeders. There's just, you know, I guess it's just a different mentality from a player standpoint, when you see those touchdowns going up there, you start to think, holy cow, we better get our act together. But when you don't convert those touchdowns, and they're just field goals, you kind of like, okay, we're still in this thing, right? Because think about it, you could have a team go down there 3 times, just like the Lions did. You could have a team get inside the 25 yard line 6 times, and you're giving up, you know, 3 points at a time. Well, you know, they were dominated in the first half, yet they were one play away from being right back in it. And I think that's the difference in mentality, that if you can score early, you can kind of bury a team psychologically, but if you don't, you kind of give them renewed life. And that is definitely the way that the Stampeders, they weren't spectacular on offense. They just kind of did enough to win the game.
That's pretty funny, Julia. It sounds like you could have had the exact same analysis from the Western final.
It's exactly the same, right? Like, and it must be very frustrating because for the Alouettes, because they're going to look at the beginning of that game where they really were moving the ball and making some things happen, yet they just couldn't finish. And you look at then in the second half, you know, the turnovers, and especially that one in the end zone where he shoot through the interception to Shannon James, that really was the backbreaker for me. You could just sense that they, you know, were running out of opportunities, and you know, that to me was the turning point. And the other thing that Calgary was able to do in the second half was they took away that short passing game of Montreal by only rushing 3 guys, and a big part of that was Mike Labinjo. You know, rather than getting to the quarterback with pressure, he was knocking down passes. Like, those were big knockdowns, 4 of them. And they all came with that in that 2nd and 3 to 4 range, not like big yardage, but those are drive killers. And, you know, they did a good job of adjusting to that at halftime.
Yeah, Julia, he was my next point. Mike Labinjo, who is this guy? He destroyed the Lions in the Western Final. And like you said, I saw him knocking down passes in the Grey Cup. I actually thought, you know, I guess Henry Burris gets the Grey Cup MVP, but Mike Labinjo had to be their playoff MVP at least.
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. I really think that he's kind of like followed in the same kind of footsteps that Brent Johnson has. He didn't play very much last year. He was kind of like, they didn't know where to put him. And this year he has emerged, especially in the playoffs, as the next dominating defensive lineman. And the fact that he's Canadian, I think you're going to see, if he stays healthy, you're going to see him, I think, do what Brent Johnson was capable of doing, and not that Brent's, you know, not capable of doing it anymore, but when Brent Johnson was at the height and the prime, where he was, you know, he won the Defensive Player of the Year, won the Canadian Player of the Year, that's kind of where you can see this guy's career going, because he can be Cam Wake scary good, that mentality where he can dominate the game from his position. So you look for big things from that guy next year.
Yeah, and you know, Julie, I went down there and I was working with you guys. A little tired that day, but I did the Western Conference Final.
Yeah, that's right. Made the big road trip
in Calgary. And I got to say, best CFL fans, because I've never been to Saskatchewan, best CFL fans I've ever seen in Calgary. I don't know how it ranks across the country, but they're pretty special fans over there, Julie. And I love the atmosphere in that stadium. That's what I take away. Calgary won the Grey Cup, but I got to say, I love their fans in that game.
Yeah, I agree. Calgary is really one of the great cities in the Canadian Football League. And, you know, the only thing, I'll say this in a couple of ways. First, I will say this. You're absolutely bang on about the fans. It is a class city, from top to bottom. The organization is first class, and the guy that I am absolutely thrilled for more than anybody is Scott Ackles. It's been a very, very, it's obviously been, well noted that, with the passing of Bob this past year, it's been a very, very difficult year on the Ackles family. And it's been, I think very, very difficult for Scott at times, because him and his father were so close. And I saw him after the game on the field, and I was hesitant in going up to him because I didn't want to kind of, get in the way of his celebration. But I finally did it, and I went over, and I said to him, I said, your dad's looking down on you right now, and he's got a big smile on his face, and he's awfully proud. And I said, I couldn't be happier for you. And then he started crying, and I started crying. Mm. I didn't want to do that to him, but I don't know. I just felt, kind of compelled to go over and say that to him because I know that it's been a difficult year for him and his family, and I'm absolutely thrilled for him, to be the president of the Calgary Stampeders, now the president of the Calgary Stampeders Grey Cup champs, is, remarkable for him and what he's been able to do. Everyone talks about John Huffnagel, but what about what Scott Ackles has been able to do? The Grey Cup is there next year, and from all indications, it's going to be a huge success. It's already going to be, it was already a smashing success before the Stampeders won it. Now you could imagine the frenzy that's going to surround this going into next year with the defending Grey Cup champions in Calgary.
Yeah. Julia, I could say it. I went out, I was in Calgary that night, and people were talking about the game. People had seen the game, and what my friends actually told me and the people I was out with was the Flames have become a very corporate fan base, and obviously, I guess, with the ticket prices and everything, but the Stampeders is still a good fan base. It's still the sports fans' fan.
And, the Calgary's, it's a booming city. It's like it's slowing down like everywhere else is slowing down, but there's been a lot of, money flowing through that province. And, but you're right with the fan base that the Stampeders have, it's still, it's just like, what can you say? It's a first class city and a first class organization, and the fans are great. And I love going there too, because the fans, there's a lot of tailgating outside the stadium.
Yeah.
There's a real good feel when you go there. So like you say, a lot like Regina, Edmonton, Calgary, Winnipeg, the CFL's a big deal there, and they love their team, and they support their team.
On to the Lions now, Julio. I didn't talk to you last week, so let's sort of do a little postmortem here. Cam Wake, any chance in hell? Yeah, he's not back here next year, hey?
No.
What are you hearing
there? I've heard now 23 teams. I've heard that he's going to get a six-figure signing bonus, which tells you that teams are serious. Now, anytime that you get a guy coming up from the National Football League and offering a six-figure signing bonus, they're serious about you making the team, and it tells you that they think that you can make their team. They're just not going to throw that kind of money around and say, oh, well, we'll just take a chance on this guy. Usually that's the $5,000 signing bonus that you get. But in his case, so much has been said about him. There's so much hype that's been around him. And all the reports that I've read and all the people that I talked to, especially this week in Montreal, they've all said that the scouts are, they all think that he can play. And now for him, it's just going to be a case of making sure that this is the right situation for him. The team that he goes to is to make sure that that's the right team for him.
You've been talking Colts all the time, all year, Julio. That's a team that has scouted him heavily. Is that the favorite to land Cam
Well,
Wake?
I think that, you know, Cal Murphy has talked to Cam Wake quite a bit. But I think that, you know, I don't know how much of a bidding war they're going to get into. But, you know, everybody, you know, when you're talking about 22 and 23 teams that are interested in you, you know, that's no joke, right? And, yeah, the Colts were obviously the most visible because we saw Cal Murphy quite a bit on the road and at practices. But, you know, for all we know, you know, he was seeing them in person. But for all we know, there could be five teams in there who've asked for film and have seen every film 10 times. And we wouldn't know about it, you know. So I'm anxious to see what's going to happen with him. I think that it's very important for him to choose the right team and to make sure that he's utilized in the right way. And I'm sure that's something that, you know, him and his agents are going to make sure that they do.
Yeah, because just putting Cam Wake into perspective, Gio, and that's what we'll be doing with this guy soon, is on my way after the game from Calgary, my friend who was actually at the game, we were driving back to his place, we were listening to the Calgary post-game show, and Pilon is the tackle on Calgary. He was defending Cam Wake in that game, limited him to a few tackles. Cam Wake got a sack, but because, as they said, he contained one of the greatest linemen in the history of the CFL, they gave him the All-Canadian in the Western Final. And he still gave up a sack and a bunch of tackles.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing about that, too, is you have to look at the context of what teams were doing with him and what they were. They basically, the kind of impact that Cam Wake had, when, you know, and Jeff Pilon's a very good tackle, I'm not going to take that away from him, but when you're basically running away from him on every play, then that just tells you that the kind of respect that they have for Cam. And you know Jeff Pilon did a good job on him, you're right, but at the same time,
I didn't say he did, I just found it ironic.
He did, but in the sense that, too, you know, they ran away from him.
Yeah,
you know, they literally changed the way they attacked the field because they're staying away from one guy. And I think that's also, you know, an indication of how good he is. When you change your offense to stay away, there's not many guys that I've heard of in this league that coaches stay away from. They usually will say, no, well, we're not going to change anything. We're just going to go at him. Yeah, he's a good player, and he's going to make some plays. But, you know, well, with him, you couldn't do that.
Yeah, no, it was great sitting there next to you in the booth, Julio, for all the home games. Just the way you constantly were talking about Cam Wake this year, you really made him stand out there. The Lions quarterback situation, you know, Julio, just watching Anthony Calvillo and also Henry Burris in the Grey Cup and watching the way the Lions, you know, Buck Pierce played in the Western Conference Final. We're going to hear questions about the quarterbacks, Julio. I expect they'll be back next year, but there will be pressure on Buck Pierce or Jarius Jackson, who's ever the starter next year, isn't there? What they did this year might not cut it next year.
Yeah, well, I will say this. Now, you know, I've heard it a little bit, and I will put it out there. I don't want to say too much, but I've actually heard a little bit that there might be a chance that one of those two might not be back.
Makes sense, actually.
Yeah. You know, one of them, and you know, Jarius makes, you know, good money. He makes starters money. And, you know, he's going to be 33 years old. So at what point do you have to say to yourself, you know, we're gonna move on and, you know, maybe go with a younger guy? Maybe that's next year. And the thing is, this is where you have to think. The Lions are going to make changes defensively. They have about three or four guys that are going to be, you know, question marks. And offensively, they have their starting two tackles that are up for free agency, and they need to re-sign Paul McCallum. So, you know, my guess would be this: they'll re-sign Rob Murphy. Jason Jimenez will be a free agent and will probably sign for big money somewhere else. But that's not a huge problem because they have Walter Stith, who they really, really like at tackle, and I don't think that's going to be a huge drop-off for them. Murphy was the key. I think that Wally Buono really likes Rob Murphy and the attitude that he brings as well as how good he is. There's a certain mentality you want in that offensive line, and that offensive line plays better when Murphy's around. That's plain and simple. But, you know, there's some also some key free agents out there that are going to want some money, and they're going to have to free up some money in order to get those guys. So there's going to have to be some give and take, and I think that's where you're going to see maybe a few guys be let go in order to bring some other guys in.
Well, Julia, the other thing, too, is to criticize Jerry Jackson this year. He was, I mean, they must have been the worst team in the league on third and short this year. And he was good. He was good at that in the past when he came in and he had to do it. But, I mean, even in the Western Final, fumbling on the 3-yard line.
Yeah, well, they have to relook at their short yardage. I mean, this is something that's been the last couple of years has not been good. And it
bit him in the ass this year, though.
You're damn right it did.
Yeah.
And that's inexcusable. In this league, third and one, and the team's lined up a yard off the ball, you're talking, your success rate's got to be way up there, if not perfect. And the Lions, in their case, it wasn't. And at critical, critical times. So that's something they're going to have to reevaluate. And you know, I would imagine that right from the coaches on down, there's going to be some change. Wally never stays status quo, and he needs to make changes. They're getting older on defense especially, and they need to bring in some new blood offensively. Stephon Logan is going to be a star in this league, but I think they need to bring in another American receiver, another young G-Roy, where they need to be able to push the middle of the field with another burner. And I'm talking about a bigger body, too. I'm not talking about a 5'9" kind of runner. I'm talking about a guy who can just flat out go up and get the ball. So, you know, because G-Roy's not getting any younger, right?
Right.
So there's going to be some changes, Darryl, that's for sure.
Right, and also, Julio, just a couple more things. Thanks so much for doing this, of course, Julio. You talked about Rob Murphy and Jimenez, and 2 points, Julio. The offensive line didn't have their best year this season, and you talked about the coaching staff. How many times this year, too many men on the huddle? Penalties like that, which you never saw this team take, it seemed, in the past. It was the offensive line didn't have his best year, and undisciplined, weird penalties taken way too often.
You're right. They didn't have their best year, and there's no coincidence in the fact that, they struggled probably the first half of the year. But once, you know, they got that consistency up there, and Murphy, I think it really hurt him not being there for training camp and the whole family issue and worrying about his kids. You know, that takes a toll on a guy, and it did. It took a toll on him. But this team, for whatever reason, just didn't look very good coming out of training camp. And I think with the weather, and they'll say that those are all just excuses, but I just think that they just didn't get that kind of that rhythm and that sync coming out of training camp. And I think probably Wally didn't feel the worry because he had a veteran group. Wasn't very many battles for jobs, that kind of thing. Whereas this year, or next year, excuse me, you're going to see a big difference in the way that training camp's probably handled. And the jobs that are going to be up for grabs are going to be aplenty. I think that, you know, there's probably going to be at least 3 or 4 guys, maybe on both sides of the ball, that are going to, you know, have to fight and claw for a job.
Awesome. There you go. Julio Caravata, BC Lion Radio Network. Julio, thanks as always.
My pleasure, as always.
Take it easy.
You too. And make sure you keep in touch, eh? Like, don't forget about me.
And you the same, Julio.
Yeah, like, just don't, like, call me, like, on, you know, June 7th when the first day of training camp comes.
Okay, I'll call you the middle of March then.
Thanks, Darryl.
Thanks, Julio.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Anything new on the horizon with you? Anything?
Yeah, no, I'm going to be doing the high school banquet on Wednesday.
Cool.
Subway Bowl banquet.
All right, yeah.
And then I'm going to be doing the Subway Bowl championship on Saturday on Sportsnet.
Oh, you guys are broadcasting it, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, look at you go, bringing bringing BC football to the country.
To the people.
I'm done. I'm done. Thanks a lot, Julio. Okay. I guess that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Talk to you soon, bud.
All right, that was Julio Caravata from the BC Lions Radio Network. Once again, folks, it is our CITR Fun Drive Spectacular, 822-8648. Please give us a shout up and donate. We do this 2 weeks a year. Our goal this year is to I'm putting my PBS Fun Drive hat on. Honestly, I don't know how to pitch this. And just call. Somebody did last week. I love you for it. I'm giving away a Yvonne Cormier signed photo to the first person who calls up today. That's a neat little photo. It's something, you know, you get other prizes and come on. Woo. Give us a call up at 822-8648, 822-8648. Once again here at CITR, we are doing our Fun Drive Spectacular. We are doing it for 2 weeks. And we've got 3 days left, counting today. So the clock is ticking. Our goal was to make $15,000. $15,000. And we are currently at, listen to this weird, whacked out, funny to say, fun, so close number. We are currently at $14,037. And 68 cents. How did we get to 68 cents? I have no idea. I don't get it. But it's awesome. I love it. I love it that we're at 68 cents. Somebody call up and donate a penny. Get us to 69 cents. I didn't mean that in a sexual way, but sure does look that way, doesn't it? Anyways, folks, give us a shout up. 822-8648. 822-8648. We here at CITR, once again, we're, of course, a non-commercial radio station. We are a volunteer-based radio station, and we need help from people just like you to keep the radio station running. And every donation, it'll go into the equipment, all that fun stuff, and it'll make the shows that much better and the station that much better. So, once again, the number is 822-8648. 822-8648. Say it now. Okay, everybody, we're going to take a break. When we're back, we're going to end it at UBC Thunderbird men's basketball. Two big wins for them on the weekend. They swept the crosstown rival SFU. I had to go out to Burnaby to call the second game. 5 o'clock on a Saturday. It was early and tires and, you know, I'll shut up now. 822-8648. That number again. Sing it now. 822-8648. You are listening to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM CITR Radio.
Hi, I'm Bryant Reeves of the Vancouver Grizzlies, and you're listening to CITR 101.9. That. Believe it or not, we're talking about sports.
I never thought I could feel so free. Flying away on a wing and a prayer.
Who could it be? Believe it or not, it's just me. CITR Sports. Please listen.
Yeah, a spur of the moment one or one made up. Trailers for sale are in.
I ain't got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing rooms buys a 8 by 12 for bedroom. I'm a man of means by no means. King of the road, third boxcar, midnight train, destination, Bangor, Maine, old
don't pay no union dues. I smoke stogies I have found. Short but not too big around. I'm a man of means by no means. King of the road. I know every engineer on every train. All of the children and all of their names. In every handout in every town. Every lock, it ain't locked when no one's around.
All the 2 hours of the shit rooms by the 8 by 12 open rooms. I'm a man of means by no means. King of the
Queers Barbecue here at 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And with us on the line from
home,
home is assistant coach from the UBC Thunder men's basketball team, Vern Knopp. And Vern, a fine weekend for your squad. You had the old home and home versus the crosstown. You guys have dominated so much, not quite rival, but they're, of course, a crosstown rival. Well, they did beat you last year in a game. They did beat you last year at UBC. The SFU clan, you beat them 90-69 on the Friday, 83-69 on the Saturday. Two convincing wins for your club. Really, I didn't see the Friday. I ditched you guys on the Friday, but I saw the Saturday. Somewhat of a close game, but never in doubt if that was possible. It seemed that it was within 15 and 7 point lead for UBC really throughout. Overall, you got to be happy with your team's play on the weekend.
Yeah, we were really, really happy with the way the guys performed. I think if my memory serves me correctly, we actually led from start to finish in both games. So the guys put in a solid 40 minutes both nights. So we're very pleased.
And going on to Friday, a guy, your star player, hasn't really gotten going for you this season. He was pretty good in the second half on the Saturday, but on Friday, those stats are looking more like what you expect from this player. Chris Dick, 11 for 19 from the field, 4 for 5 from three-point land, 26 points in 24 minutes. A breakout game for him. You got one more before the break. Hopefully you get that back healthy, but Chris put up big numbers on the Friday night.
Yeah, the Friday night was, he was all, was just, you know, really was his breakout game. Been kind of waiting for it for a few weeks. But what was more impressive than his totals was the fact that he only did it in, I think he had 27 points in 24 minutes. He didn't have to play a lot of minutes or take a lot of shots to get his point total up there. So it was quite impressive. And actually on Saturday, he was pretty impressive as well. Point totals wasn't up as much. But they really focused on him a lot more, and he did a good job of just getting other guys involved. And second half, when it kind of got a little bit close, he made sure it didn't get too close by hitting some big buckets for us.
And another guy I thought played pretty well for you. You know, I thought he played real well for you. He'd actually maybe your biggest shots of the game on the Saturday night. I believe he hit a couple three-pointers when it seemed that SFU might go on a run. He had a steal late in the game to put the one away. Nathan Yu, 10 points, and I think only 6 points on the Friday, but in limited minutes. I mean, this guy's getting 16, 17 minutes a night. He's coming along real nicely for you guys, hey?
Yeah, he really is. You know, in some ways, it's really Nathan's first year was he was really had a lot of injuries, and so even though he's a second-year player in some ways, he's still very, very, I guess you could say, green in the fact that he missed so much time last year. But you know the key thing with Nathan is that he's been healthy all year. You know he's had some good weeks of practice, and his games are starting to show on in the games as well. It's just with our depth, it really is tough to get him minutes. I think if he's with another team, he'd probably be playing 30 plus minutes for other teams. But we're really pleased with him, and I think you're only going to see that. Bigger and better things for Nathan in the future.
Yeah, what is it? I mean, you know, you're going to have the three seniors graduate this year, Bryson Cool, Matt Racher, and, of course, Chris Dick. And Chris is really the one where you want to see where Nathan's going to step up. What is the upside for this guy? And I'll just say it, Vern, could this guy lead your team in scoring as soon as next season?
You know, it's a very good possibility. Coach Hans has always spoke very highly of Nathan. We the fact that Jordan, his older brother, had played for us, we've known about Nate since the early years. And he was one of the reasons we wanted to bring him into UBC was a guy that when Chris left, could fill that role. You know, he won a championship in high school. I believe it was grade 10 years. So he's always performed in tough games, and the sky's the limit for him in the future. Just the key thing with Nathan is he just has to stay healthy.
Vancouver College, though, in his senior year, I was at the game. They lost to Dover Bay in the semifinals, blew a big lead in the second half.
Yeah, but that was really a team. You know, they had him and Trasolini, and that was, you know, it was two talented players. The rest of the team was, it was really a two-man show. You know, it's tough to win a AAA championship, especially when he'd only played for them for the 1 year. So, you know, the fact that they got as far as they did was pretty impressive. And but I believe it was grade 10 when he's back home in Prince George, where they won with Dutchess Park. I believe they won a AA championship.
Yeah, I just had to throw that in there.
Thanks, Joel. You always keep me on my toes.
I just had to throw that in there. Thank you. This weekend, it gets fun this weekend. UVic comes to town. You only get the one game, and then you guys get the Christmas holidays. When you guys go to Hawaii, actually?
I believe we leave on the 16th of December.
All right, so you got a month in between conference games here, over a month actually.
Over a month, yeah.
You know, you get to go to Hawaii in about 2.5 weeks after this one, so a nice little break for you guys. You get UVic on the Friday. Couldn't be, unless it was maybe Calgary coming to town, which will happen in the second half of the year. Couldn't be a bigger game for you guys. You currently sit with a 9-1 record. They're 7-3. And I got to feel, Vern, number one goal for you guys, I'm just guessing here, the first goal is probably to win your regular season Pacific Division Championship. And quite frankly, with a win over Calgary on Friday, you'll have a three-game lead,
yep.
But you'll have the tiebreaker, so in essence, a 3.5-game lead with 12 games to go in the season. That's a pretty healthy lead, Vern. But if you lose that game to Calgary, your lead's pretty much cut to a game and a half. So, you know, your margin of error. But this is a game, basically, on Friday. If you win, you're looking real pretty the rest of the way for the division championship.
Yes, it is. We're actually playing Victoria Friday. You got Calgary in your head.
I said Victoria, didn't I?
No, you said Calgary.
I meant Victoria.
I know what you meant, but you said Calgary.
Yeah,
but anyway, it's a huge game for us this Friday night. You know, it's really the biggest game to date on our season. You know, exactly like you said, if we take care of business on Friday, it's a three-game lead in essence against Victoria heading into the new year. And you always, like we told the guys on Saturday night at SFU, you always want to head into the break on a winning positive note. So otherwise, going in on a losing note is kind of makes the next month, like I said to the guys, kind of like a living hell because you're always, you're still not over that loss kind of thing. So it's really important for us in a lot of ways to get the win on Friday.
Have you guys been, because I'll get into the Vic game in a moment, but you're tied with Calgary currently for the conference regular season championship. I don't know how much that means, but it will matter for seeding in CanWest Final Four if that's where you teams end up. And national rankings, it'll matter if you both make it to nationals, or even wild card, it could help for nationals for one of you guys. What have you seen from Calgary this year? Because they seem to be a team that's also doing very well this year and will play here next year.
Yeah, Calgary really is pretty much the same, pretty close to being the same team they were last year, where they actually finished first in Canada West. They had a lot of their players back, the Beckering brothers, Henry and I can't think of the other Beckering, but the two brothers were there, both back. Tyler Fiddler, who is the Canada West Rookie of the Year last year, he's back in his second year. They're big, they're very physical. They can, you know, they have no trouble scoring, and they're a big rebounding team. So it'll be definitely a game that will be circled on our calendar come January.
Yeah.
But I mean, ultimately, our main goal is to win Pacific Division and our playoffs so that we host to the Final Four, and then the seedings will take care of itself. You know, hopefully if we win against Victoria Friday, chances are it'll probably be us in Calgary 1-2, and then the 3-4 spots, the threes will probably be Regina, I believe now. I think they have the better team than Brandon, and then more than likely it'll be Victoria. So, but that's getting way ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
We're not even thinking about the Calgary game right now. It's our whole focus is on Victoria on Friday night.
Break us down, though, Victoria on Friday night. You went there earlier in the season, actually just a couple weeks ago, and you won both games. They hung with you, but you won both games pretty convincingly, Vern. What were the scores here in the Victoria games? You won by 8 and 9 points, respectively, in the two games.
you know, the first game, very low scoring. You won 65-57. The second game, more high scoring. You won 86-77. How do you think they're going to play you? Because if they want to win the division, they do have to look at this one as a must-win game.
Yeah, I think they have to be looking at it as a must-win game. You know, it's a cliche, but they're, I guess you could say their backs are against the wall because I don't think they want to fall two games behind us. You know, with Victoria, it's usually the same thing. They want to play the games in the sixth, even though they talk about scoring more and up-tempoing more. They really, against us, want to play the game and try to keep it low scoring into the 60s and early 70s. It's a team that just comes in. They play extremely hard on the defensive end. They compete for 40 minutes. They, you know, they got a couple posts in Mitch Gudgeon and Tyler Haas who just play really physical and are aggressive teams. So they're always a tough challenge, whether you're playing them at home or at their place.
And what were you able to do to them in the sweep in Victoria that you guys are going to try to do? What worked for you so well?
I think the key was just, I mean, even though we tried the key on Mitch Gudgeon and he still had huge both nights, but I think he led the game, both teams in scoring. The main thing with us, I think, is just to try to just get to their bench and up-tempo. I mean, our bench has been just killing other teams in our league. You know, we play 10, 12 guys. I believe those games in Victoria, our bench, I think the one night actually had 52 over 80 points or something like that. That's always the key. It's just with us, it's just we just really focus on what we want to accomplish, and that's play tough defense, rebound, and execute on offense.
Yeah, Vern, that is something I got to commend your players and really your coaching staff thus far this season is it seems like the players, because I see your depth as your greatest advantage, and it seems like the players have really bought into it, and you as coaches have gotten the players minutes, you know, to go around. Doesn't seem like there's any complaining from what I can tell, but it's been effective. You could see it. Other teams are fouling out. Other team starters are getting tired, but because of all the subs you guys get to make, you seem to be the stronger team down the stretch. Maybe not in the Trinity game here where you won in overtime, but even that game, they had guys foul out in the overtime period, and then you took over the game. So it's a huge edge for you guys, eh?
Oh, and it has been. I mean, especially when you're playing back-to-back nights, I found it like Friday against SFU, are the most minutes I think anybody played on our team was 26 minutes. And we looked at SFU starters, they're all at 34, 35, 38 minutes. And I think that was a huge factor on Saturday, as it was Victoria the previous, I guess it was almost now. You know, it's a luxury we have, and the guys have bought into it. I mean, winning helps. And the best thing is the players are all real close and they all get along on and off the court, and that makes a huge difference. So there hasn't been any complaining about playing time. I mean, everybody ultimately would love to play 40 minutes, but unfortunately on this team it's not going to happen.
Ah, what a loving family you guys are. What a loving family. Who wins a game, though, between the starters and the next five? Who wins that game? And are you going to play that in practice?
We play our starters a lot together in practice, and a lot of times our bench wins those games as well. You know, we don't really make that big a deal about who really starts the games. Like we always tell the guys, it's not really always who starts the games, but it's not a lot of times who finishes the games. You know, and that's kind of what one of the things that the guys have bought into, because everybody plays so many minutes. And it's always seems to be someone else stepping up. I mean, I think if you looked at our top scores the last five or six games, it's probably been someone different every game. It's a huge luxury. And in practice, the guys just compete hard at it all the time because they know that they got to be able to take advantage when they get their chance.
Vern Opp, assistant coach, UBC Thunder River men's football. Vern, thanks so much for doing this, as always.
Thank you.
And I'll see you on Friday.
We'll see you Friday.
Thanks, Vern.
Thanks.
All right. I was Vern Knopp, assistant coach of the UBC Thunder men's basketball team. You're listening to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada, Tuesday 4:30 to 6. And once again, we here at CITR Radio are doing our funding drive. Please give us a call up at 822-8648. That number again, 822-8648. We do this once a year. Once a year for 2 weeks. Our goal this season, this schedule, is to make $15,000. And what do you know? We are at $14,037.68. And once again, if somebody has called in, great. But the first guy to call in during my show will get a Yvon Corvoyer signed hockey photo. So
congratulations to that person. All right. So 822-8648, 822-8648. All, every which one donation is welcome. So give us a call up. All right, folks. Lots going on in the world of sports, of course, for Vancouver and for hockey right now. Lots going on. Roberto Luongo, of course, has that little tweaked groin. I don't know if you've been following it, but the Vancouver Canucks star goaltender, Roberto Luongo, who's really just taken this town by storm the last three seasons, he's hurt. He's hurt right now, and the prognosis is week to week. So what does that mean? I don't know. It's very strange. He might be back next week. He might be back in a month. There's 52 weeks in a year. No, but his agent actually came out and said it'll be 4 to 5 weeks Luongo will be out. So he's probably going to miss somewhere between 15, 12, and even up to 20 games. You got to figure if the healing gets delayed. If he has a setback. That's the word I'm looking for. But yeah, that's a pretty long stretch there for the Canucks. And Curtis Sanford, of course, playing right now. And hey, since Luongo goes down, comes into the Pittsburgh game, gets the win there, and gets the win over Detroit last night. So here he is, Curtis Sanford, the backup goalie, coming in, going into Pittsburgh and getting a win, and then getting a win at home versus Detroit. Those are the two teams that played in the Stanley Cup final last year. So that's pretty neat. And, you know, you got to figure, if they can hang in there till Luongo gets back, they're looking real good. So see what happens with the Canucks, but tough injury, but so far so good. The other one with the Canucks is, because Luongo goes down, Corey Schneider, first round pick out of, I believe, Boston College or Boston University about 3 years ago. He's called up now as the backup goalie, so we're finally going to get to see Corey Schneider, who might turn into trade bait, might turn into the number one goalie one day here if they can't re-sign Luongo going into next season, because he's a free agent after next year. So Corey Schneider, our first chance to look at him. And other news today, coming out of TSN, Brian Burke will be signing with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Whoop-de-doo! Okay, we're going to take a break. Once again, it is our funding drive here at CITR 101.9 FM. Give us a call up at 822-8648, 822-8648. All donations are welcome. $30 or more, you're going to get lots of great prizes. Tax receipts, CITR friends cards, T-shirts, CDs, lots of stuff. And, you know, the people answering the phone, they'll be able to give you the rundown. And, you know, it's pretty cool. So we need your help. And just give us a call. 822-8648. 822-8648. Why did I lose my enthusiasm for that one? Okay, come on. 822-8648. 822-8648. Our goal is to raise $15,000. We're currently at $14,037.68. So we've got two days and 5 hours and 30 minutes to go. That's because apparently we're going through Thursday. Or maybe we're going till Thursday. So we might only have a day and a half left. Come on, people, pick it up. 822-8648, 822-8648. Please give us a call. All right, we're going to take a break. When we're back, we're going to do a little NFL, National Football League talk. BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas will be on the line with us. You are listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio. The city we are in is Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Hey, how you doing? This is Sean from Youth Brigade. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
fun.
While
fun
cloaks itself in a plethora of disguises, its favorite mantle still remains
fun. Fun
devours all it touches, its voracious appetite rarely fulfilled. Yet
fun
doesn't only destroy, it creates and molds as well. Let's examine closely then this dangerously evil creation, this new breed. But a word of caution, handle it with care, and don't drop your guard. This rapacious new breed prowls both alone and in packs, operating at any level, any time, anywhere, and with anybody. Who are they?
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Hi, this is Burt Reynolds. You listen to Wiener's Barbecue, and they're not giving me a damn thing for this. When we first moved to New York, we had a great apartment that was dirt cheap.
And we found out why it was so cheap.
Our friend Amy said there was a great apartment in her building.
Dirt cheap, but it's a hotel for women.
Okay,
we made one adjustment.
Now these other ladies know us as Buffy and Hildegard.
But they also know us as Kip and Henry, Buffy and Hildy's brothers. I am crazy about the blonde.
This experience is going to make a great book.
See, it's all perfectly normal.
To go, the clock does stop.
Well,
that'll
be a 98-yard field goal.
A 98-yard field goal attempt.
Have you ever seen the movie with the horse? Where the horse kicks this long?
Yes, absolutely.
They need the horse. 2:38 to go. Birds.
Somebody get the horse.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And with us on the line right now from Nevada, Las Vegas, how's the weather there, BJ?
A lot nicer than where you are.
Yeah, it's a little yucky today. Actually, it was kind of sunny today, but cold.
I wore shorts.
You're in the desert, though.
I know. I'm not complaining.
You're not complaining. So, BJ, let's start a little fantasy football talk. Now, you find yourself in the race for the Linda Wiener Cup, our fantasy football, for really the first time in about 6 years. You've got a shot to win it. You're in it year one, year two. We're now in year eight. You haven't been heard from for a while. And suddenly with four games to go, you found yourself in it. And did I just see you turn down a deal to acquire one of the number one running backs in the NFL, Michael Turner? Did I just see you did that?
Well, listen, you know, obviously the structure of our fantasy league is a little bit more complex, and I should actually say a lot more complex than the leagues out there. Obviously, we're a keeper league. We protect the majority of our roster, seven players going into the next season. And, you know, it really makes making moves that much more important of, you know, giving away the future of a franchise. You know, for a player that may or may not help me win the next three games. It's a difficult situation and one that I certainly do not feel very comfortable in.
Now we're talking Felix Jones, though, who is the scat back. He's a scat. I mean, they have Marion Barber there. Michael Turner's the guy.
That's true.
So you're
no, listen, I mean, you know, when I drafted Felix Jones, I thought that he was, you know, the most talented back available in the draft and the guy that had the most long-term success of, you know, 10 to 15 years from now. When you look back at all of the rookie running backs that got drafted in this draft, you know, where would they be ranked 15 years from now and not 5 months from now? And that was why I went with Felix Jones. You look at that situation in Dallas, and we've seen that before. Marion Barber was drafted behind Julius Jones, and within two seasons, Julius Jones is gone, and Marion Barber is the full-time back there. So, you know, I feel that Felix Jones will be a starting back in the NFL at some point in the pretty near future. And listen, I mean, what we've seen out of him, I mean, we've seen some wheels, we've seen some cuts, we've seen a guy who is obviously extremely talented and has the ability to be the real deal. Listen, when you're averaging 9 yards a carry, albeit limited carries, that's still pretty impressive in the NFL.
Michael Turner, young guy, though, too.
Yeah, and, you know, not only a young guy, but also a guy that doesn't have a lot of, you know, he is 26 years old. But that being said, you know, he backed up LT for what I think was 3 seasons in San Diego. You're really looking at a guy who hasn't been used, not a lot of wear and tear on his body, doesn't have a lot of career carries, and obviously is having a phenomenal year. Is on a team that's improving, is third in the league in rushing, first in touchdowns, I think, after his 3-touchdown game. So, you know, listen, it's difficult, but it's, the other thing, Daryl, for me is also not only is it Felix Jones, my first round pick from last year, but he also wants my first round pick from this year as well. And, that's really rich to give up.
Awesome. I love it, BJ. I love it.
I was going to say, if any of your listeners have any advice, I'd love to hear it.
Staying a little bit with fantasy football, I'm just sort of going to touch on the Monday night game last week. If you've got Drew Brees, because I know the guy at our pool single-handedly being kept in it by Drew Brees. I mean, you watched that game last night, BJ. How dominant did Drew Brees look? I think he threw, what did he throw for, 4 touchdowns last night, 323 yards, 20 of 26, no picks. And you know he could have thrown for more touchdowns and more yards if they had to. You just watched that game last night, and you watched Drew Brees go, and you just asked yourself, how is New Orleans only 6-5?
Yeah, well, and you know, Daryl, I mean, you know, this guy is on pace to you know, shatter NFL records as far as yards in a season, touchdowns in a season. I mean, you know, you looked at Tom Brady last year and what he did, and the fact that, you know, Matt Castle is the first Patriot quarterback ever to have back-to-back 400-yard games. I mean, that seems surprising, especially looking at how many points, you know, New England was scoring last year, and to have a guy like Drew Brees come in and you know, shatter marks. That you know, shatter Brady's numbers from last year. It really goes to show you how unbelievable of a season this guy's having. And you know, Daryl, listen, the Saints might be 6-5 right now, but without Drew Brees, what would their be?
Yeah, it shows you how bad their defense must be. You know, basically, another story, Beej, in the football of the past weekend. Brett Favre. I mean, now you can talk about it. Goes into Tennessee, beats the Titans 34-13. I mean, he put up 34 points on arguably the best defense in all of football. And, you know, just coupling that, BJ, I just go back to what my dad said to me when we were watching Favre beat the Patriots a week and a half ago on the Thursday night, when he just said, why did the Packers trade Brett Favre? You look at Aaron Rodgers yesterday, looks like he's going to be a good quarterback, but, I mean, short term, the Jets, I mean, what a steal they had getting Brett Favre. A steal they had Brett Favre. You got to wonder what Tampa Bay was doing and other teams not stepping up to the plate to get him.
Yeah, and Daryl, you know, I think ultimately, as far as Tampa Bay goes, I don't think Green Bay was realistically going to trade them within the conference, and with especially to a team they were going to play this year. I think that, you know, they knew that Favre still had you know, at least 1 year left, still had some bones in that arm of his, and was going to be a productive quarterback. I mean, you know, the interesting thing now is the draft pick that New York Jets are going to give Green Bay. You know, we're now looking at that draft pick escalating. I believe right now it's a third. We're looking at a second if they make the playoffs, which, you know, looks like they're on pace to do. And should they make the Super Bowl, it then becomes a first-round pick. And listen, I don't think that there is any fan out there or any GM out there that wouldn't, you know, trade a first-round pick just to get to the Super Bowl. So obviously, should the Jets get there, that's a pick that that they'll happily give to Green Bay. But yeah, you know, and Daryl, I got to tell you, I think the key of last Sunday's game, we talked about this a little bit last week, of Brett Favre becoming more of the team player and the coaching staff getting Thomas Jones heavily involved in mixing it up, run and pass, and Thomas Jones had an absolutely monster game against, you know, a very top run defense in Tennessee. And really, you know, Daryl, the Jets defense has been, you know, phenomenal this season. Their run defense has been fantastic. You're looking at a team that's playing team football, even if Brett Favre is getting a lot of the love.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Tennessee, who's run all over teams this year, 11 carries, 45 yards in that game. You mentioned Thomas Jones, Leon Washington, 8 carries for 82 yards, also out of the backfield. You mentioned breaking up the plays, 39 passes, 39 runs, 32 passes. So Favre even throwing less passes than the run. I didn't think the Jets were going to be this good. I have to say that.
Well, and you know, too, it's not just Favre. You know, I mean, you look at all these other guys that they went out and got. You know, they shored up their offensive line. They get Alan Faneca out of Pittsburgh. You know, one of the top OLs in at least the AFC. You look at where they drafted on their defensive line. I mean, you know, these guys added some pretty serious playmakers to their roster. And listen, is Favre the catalyst for all of this? Absolutely. You know, without him, you know, it's almost like a boat with no rudder. There's no captain on the wheel, you know. So, you know, Favre's role certainly cannot be underestimated. But, you know, it's so much more than just him. I mean, these guys are playing great team football. You know, I think now is where it gets challenging. You know, when you know, you start to separate from the pack a little bit, when the good teams rise to the top, when you start looking at playoff positioning, home field advantage, you know, who you're playing in the playoffs and what your road might be to the Super Bowl. I mean, this is where you make or break your season. Yes, Brett Favre and the New York Jets have perfectly set the table to eat a very delicious meal. Can they close the deal? Or are they going to end up, you know, washing dishes in the back because they can't pay for their bill?
Well done there. But you got to say, that was beautiful, by the way. You got to say, winning in New England, winning in Tennessee doesn't get much harder on the schedule than that. Tennessee Titans lose their first game of the year, BJ. And the unfortunate part of that is we were going to have a real cool Thanksgiving matchup. And it's still a total lopsided deal. The Detroit Lions will be playing the Tennessee Titans at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Thursday. The nation will be watching in the U.S. And Detroit led Tampa Bay 17-0. They were looking great early on in that game until they watched Tampa Bay put up 38 consecutive points in the 38-20 loss. Detroit loses again, and too bad Brett Favre had to do it, because you would have had the 0-11 Lions versus the 11-0 Tennessee Titans. We almost had that matchup on Thursday.
I wonder if a matchup has ever existed like that late into the season. But you know what? I'll bet you we saw that last year with New England versus Miami.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, for Tennessee, you know, I didn't think they were going to go defeated. I don't think that they were that kind of football team. And you know, you almost look at a team kind of being a little bit overdue for a loss, or maybe coming in a little bit high, or, you know, the other team looks across the board, sees zero in the loss categories, gets really motivated for those games, which we saw at the end of the season with New England last year. So listen, for Tennessee, I don't think that this changes anything. I think this is a very good football team. I think that they maybe got away from their game plan a little bit against the Jets. And listen, sometimes a loss is a very good thing, because you can learn so much more from a loss than you can with a win. You know, if you win, you win. I mean, how hard are you really looking to see, you know, what you could have done better? Obviously, when you hang a W, or when your opponent hangs a W on you, you know, and you have that loss, you got to go back into the room, look at the game tape, look at the film, look what you could have done better, and how you can come out next week and be even more competitive. And I don't think there's any chance Detroit has of winning this game. I think Tennessee is going to be highly motivated to make a statement, to get back on the winning side of the ball, and I think that they're really going to hand Detroit, a pretty vicious victory.
That is pretty much the matchup, though, that, you know, if you don't want to watch football all day, I'm going to miss Tennessee-Detroit, you know? Like, it just had, actually, it's a pretty poor slate on
Thursday. Well, I was going to say, Daryl, I think all three games are pretty terrible.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, I think there's storylines in the other two games that are a little bit more interesting. Obviously, what's happening to your guys in Philadelphia?
Yikes.
You know, will they be able to recover from this against an Arizona team that, you know, certainly wants to clinch the division and is coming off a very tough loss against the defending Super Bowl champions? So, you know, there is an interesting conflict in that game of one of those teams. And they both need wins very badly, is obviously going to get one. And in Seattle, Dallas, I mean, listen, all this, you know, have you ever seen a team gone from like Super Bowl contender to not making the playoffs to their back in like 4 weeks? Like the public perception of the Dallas Cowboys, it's absolutely incredible. I think that Seattle may actually have a chance to go into Dallas and pull one out on Thanksgiving, you know, especially when you're looking at a big, fat, double-digit point spread.
Well, yeah, and Seattle hosts Washington on the weekend. They lose that game like they've done to almost everybody this season.
Oh, so many others.
Seattle sitting at 2-9. Matt Hasselbeck's numbers, 12 for 14, 103 yards in that game. And on the, I mean, things are bad in Seattle. On the other side of the ball, Tony Romo looks like he may be back already. Still wearing that brace, but he gets another great matchup versus Seattle. I mean, it's basically, he's at the point in the schedule, I get a kick around the NFC West for a couple weeks. That just might be what's going on right now. 341 yards, 3 touchdowns for Romo on the weekend. T.O., he has a big game. What do you have? 7 catches for 213 yards on the weekend and a touchdown. So, you know, Seattle, you think they might cover the spread, Beach, but it looks like Dallas is getting going, and they're just going straight down the toilet.
Yeah, you know, it seems to me like this could be one of the games where Dallas is maybe looking ahead of the schedule a little bit too comfortable playing at home on Thanksgiving. You know, obviously Hasselbeck is freshly back from an injury. Got to give him some time to get that feeling back. Obviously, their receiving core is an absolute disaster. But, you know, I don't know. It just seems to me like there's an opportunity for Seattle to kind of come in and you know, really surprise some people. Mm-hmm. Listen, I mean, this is a terrible football team. They're certainly not getting any better. And you know, will Dallas be looking ahead a little bit? Jason Witten's all banged up. And, you know, Darryl, you know, obviously T.O. had a huge game. His first game over 100 receiving yards going into last season, which is pretty amazing when you look at, you know, his standing of premier receivers in the league. And you know, even more amazingly, you know, once you look at the game tape a little bit, you know, you look at how San Francisco was covering T.O., and this is not a guy that you give a 5, 6, 7, 8 yard cushion to, because, you know, he still has the wheels and he can still get by you. But this is a guy you want to get right up into him, jam him on the line, get in his face, get into his head a little bit. And for some reason, San Francisco didn't want to do that. They wanted to give him a big cushion, and the guy absolutely got burned. I don't think that we'll see a game like this out of T.O. for the rest of the year, because I think teams understand that a little bit better. You know, I don't know if that's a Mike Singletary thing in San Francisco, but, you know, again, looking at a team that's been miscoached all season long and has played very poorly all season long, and it's sometimes it comes down to simple decisions like that of, well, we're going to give T.O. a little bit of a cushion today.
The other game on Thursday, BJ, you've got, as you mentioned, Philadelphia, who things are looking real, real weird there. How long will Donovan McNabb last in this game? We might see a big game out of Philly, though. We'll find out. But, I mean, you know, a tie with Cincinnati and then getting smoked in Baltimore, taking on Arizona. Huge game for Arizona, looking at 7-4. And it looks like they have the division in hand. But, you know, to get to 8-4, you're looking pretty good. That's a pretty good record. But before we get into that game, I do want to touch on the Baltimore Ravens, who smoked Philadelphia on the weekend. Their defense was awesome. They're 7-4 right now. And this is a Baltimore team, rookie quarterback Joe Flacco in there. My point with Baltimore, though, is people, it seemed, forgot how good of a defense Baltimore can put out there, and that defense is back with a vengeance this year.
Well, and listen, when you're playing against Donovan McNabb and Kevin Cole, it's pretty easy to make yourself look pretty damn good.
They've been good all year, though.
You know, but yeah. Darryl, you're absolutely right. I mean, Baltimore has to be the surprise team out of the AFC. You know, you can maybe make a case for the Jets, you know, maybe for New England, especially after Brady goes down, to still be competitive in this manner. But, you know, Baltimore really came out of nowhere. And you know, interesting, you know, coming in and beating Philadelphia, you have Jim Harbaugh, you know, beating his mentor and the team that came up with in the Philadelphia Eagles. The same thing we saw in Washington and Seattle, Jim Zorn coming in and really taking it to, you know, his former boss of Holmgren. I think the most interesting thing for me out of this game last week, you know, obviously Baltimore's defense played great. Ed Reed, longest interception in NFL history, broke his own record for a touchdown. You know, the most interesting thing to me was the pulling of Donovan McNabb. And you're looking at Philadelphia. They're down by 3 points at halftime. I mean, obviously, that's a game that they can get into. Fine, you're going to pull Donovan McNabb. I don't know that it's necessarily a much of a pulling a Donovan McNabb issue, as it let's wake the rest of this goddamn team up issue, and this is the only way to kind of do it. But if that's the case, How does Andy Reid not tell Donovan McNabb himself? You're looking at the head coach and quarterback tandem that is has the longest active streak, and I think maybe even the record for most wins as a tandem in the league, and you're not going to have the respect to tell him that yourself. You're going to have the quarterback coach do it. You know, Darryl, I think that just the way that happened, not the fact that he got pulled, but how it happened, shows that we're going to see some major changes in Philadelphia at the end of the season, whether it be Andy Reid going or Donovan McNabb going, maybe a combination of the two. You're seeing some dysfunction, you're seeing some pressure, and I think you're seeing the stress get a little bit for Andy Reid. I mean, this is a guy that's been batted around the last few seasons, and you know he's had the ability to put some good records up by the end of the season. I mean, you know, they were chasing for the playoffs last year, but I mean that to me seems so mismanaged.
And, you know, they're doing it in the very forgiving media city of Philadelphia, too,
well,
right?
Yeah, and then they go back into Philly, and it's like, how can he possibly start Kevin Kolb in that game? There's no possible way that he could do that, even if they think Kevin Kolb is going to be the next great quarterback. And listen, I mean, this is a guy that we have seen absolutely nothing from. And, you know, if Andy Reid was looking at changing the direction of the franchise, I mean, I got to wonder the timing of him doing that. And now, like you said, they're going back home, and it is going to be an extremely hostile home crowd.
Thursday, though, you're going to have Arizona taking on Philadelphia, BJ. Your thoughts on that? I think it's a it's not a crap game, this one. This is an intriguing matchup. Philly still does have playoff hopes, and this could be Arizona's national coming out party if they can pull off a big performance here.
Yeah, I don't know about the Phillies playoff hopes, but I'll tell you one thing. You have several trends, you know, going against Arizona. Arizona's been terrible on the road this year. They've also lost every game in which they've had to travel to the Eastern time zone. So you look at them now traveling to the Eastern time zone on a short week and having to get ready to play football on a Thursday. The only saving grace to that is it is the night game. And so, you know, when you look at teams traveling east and the reasons why they have so many problems, listen, it makes total sense. The game is kicking off at, you know, 6:45 local time or 7 o'clock local time. Now you have Arizona coming. It's a night game. So, so the timing doesn't come into play as much. You know, I think Arizona is going to take this game. I think that they're going to want to get this division, put it away, maybe look at being able to improve their standing over the next couple of weeks of the season. And if not, then maybe resting some of these guys and giving Bolden some time on the bench. You know, maybe this is the perfect opportunity to see Matt Leinart and to see what his future is. You know, keep in mind, Kurt Warner is a unrestricted free agent at the end of the season.
I don't know where you're going with that. It's Kurt Warner's an MVP candidate.
Yeah, oh, no, listen, Darryl, I'm not arguing that in the least bit, but what I'm saying is, you know, you want to see if Matt Leinart is the real deal, and obviously Arizona needs to do that at some point of, is this guy truly the future of the franchise? You know, now, maybe not this week, but in 2 weeks, you have the division wrapped up, you can't improve your playoff standing at all. You know, if there's one thing Warner, you know, he's old, and he's certainly vulnerable to injury. You know, I mean, how, you know, would you keep him in the last 3 weeks of the season if you cannot improve your playoff position? I mean, I don't know that I would. I mean, I would at least, you know, maybe look at that. You maybe bench him 15 and 16. He comes back to 17 just so he's not totally rusty for the playoffs. But, I think that if these guys get in a situation where they're locked into to one particular spot, which, you know, they definitely have the possibility of being, especially with the strength of the NFC South, you could look at them saying, hey, you know what? This is, you know, let's see what we got here. We already know we're going to the playoffs. Warner's going to be our guy once we get there. MVP seasons aren't made in weeks 15, 16, and 17.
Well, I'll give you this right now. Arizona, they're 4 games up in the divisional lead, but they're currently 1 game behind Tampa Bay right now. I don't know who would have the tiebreaker there for a first-round bye in the playoffs. So.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And listen, Darryl, of course, you know, if they can improve position, then that argument is, you know, takes on a very different situation.
We got one more topic here, BJ. I wanted to get into the Patriots and Colts, but we'll save that for another week. Two teams that look like they might be falling out of it, but they're there. Let's save that for another week. The Colts go into Cleveland, and the Patriots host Pittsburgh in what should be an awesome game right there. But I want to talk about two teams here in the last couple minutes that I think are the disappointments, two teams that people expected a lot of this year. And, well, with their losses on the weekend, I think these guys are pretty much done. San Diego loses to the Colts, drops to 4-7. But I think an almost an even more disappointment because
San Diego had injuries. They had Sean Merriman go down, Antonio Gates battling the toe all year. Tomlinson's been banged up. They can at least attribute a lot of it to injuries. But Jacksonville, what a disaster. 30-12 losers at home to Minnesota. They're 4-7, and I don't know where their excuses come from in Jacksonville.
No, and you know, over the last couple of weeks, we've seen that team completely, you know, deteriorate and completely throw in the towel. You see, you know, the head coach, Jack Del Rio, fighting with, you know, the former defensive captain of the team, Mike Peterson. I mean, you are seeing, you know, what happens when you start losing games on a frequent basis. You know, I've lost, what, 3 or 4 in a row at this point. Things, you know, and you're absolutely right. I mean, they, you know, they're not a team like Cleveland, which was a little bit of a flash in the pan last year, have a lot of talent, you know, people expected a lot out of them this year, but are we really that surprised that they're not better? Probably not, you know what I mean? However, you're totally right. I mean, you know, Jacksonville comes out with David Garrard, who is an amazingly efficient quarterback last year. You have a two-headed dragon, Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew coming out of the backfield. You see Matt Jones, you start to actually develop as a receiver. I think the biggest problem is the defense. The defense has not been able to really stop anyone. And you know, is it a loss of a guy like Marcus Stroud, who leaves the defensive line and goes to Buffalo? You know, I'll tell you where I think the biggest loss was. Mike Smith, former defensive coordinator, is now the head coach in Atlanta and doing phenomenally. Man. And it goes to show you that he's an effective coach, that the players love him. They buy into the program of what he's selling. And then you look at how he's turned that team over in one short season. And then on the flip side, you know, how that Jacksonville defense, which was so imposing in years past, has completely fallen apart. And I mean, that would have to be my guess of the biggest change and you know, the biggest reason for their absolute turnaround.
Yeah, and the other one with Jacksonville too was they had a respectable in New England playoff loss last year. They did not get blown out of the water by the Patriots in the. I believe they even won a playoff game last year.
Yeah, well, they beat Pittsburgh in the playoff on the David Gerrard fourth run. So no, listen, I mean these were you're absolutely right. If you're looking at the most disappointing team, I mean, I would have to think that this would be it. I mean, you look at the injuries that San Diego's had, and you know, you lose the heart of your defense, and you lose the heart of your offense, and then, you know, other guys get banged up along the way. You got to figure Jackson was a little bit more disappointing, especially because, listen, I mean, San Diego is the AFC West. You do have Denver in first place. You know, they could potentially catch them. I'm not saying that it's likely of happening, but they're not exactly eliminated from the playoffs, where Jacksonville has absolutely no chance of making it in.
Yeah, I'll give you. Denver didn't look too good losing to Oakland. Apparently, I didn't see.
Man, Denver too. I mean, I think that is has to be one of the question mark teams of what the hell is going on there. I mean, they spent so much money on their defense. They go, Champ Bailey. Then they signed Dre Bly to play on the other side, And you know, they go out and they get, you know, linebackers and defense, and that defense is absolutely atrocious. And you know, so many injuries are running back, and now it's all on Jay Cutler. I mean, that team is a mess. How that team is, you know, has a good chance of making the playoffs. I mean, you know, the AFC West and the NFC West, I guess there's things in common there, huh?
Yeah, what's great about Denver, if they win that division, they keep going like this, they will be one of the few teams in NFL history that will be a home underdog by about 6 points in the first round of the playoffs.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And Daryl, you know, real funny thing I hadn't even picked up on, but AFC West, NFC West, both the worst divisions in their respective conferences, no team has gone east across a 3-hour timeline and won a game from the West Coast this year. You know, I don't know why we're seeing that more now than we ever did before, but that seems to be a trend that this year is having a larger role than I ever remember it playing in the past.
Awesome. B, thanks as always, and good luck figuring out your Felix Jones-Michael Turner saga there.
Thanks, Weensy.
Yo. All right, everybody, that's all for Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM. And was that for me, or was that just we had a donation, I see? The board went up.
It might have been someone shocked and paid my donation.
You son of a bitch.
Might
you.
Be the actual paid one. I'm not sure.
$14,115.78 is our current total right now here at CITR. Our goal is $15,000. We're not there.
We're close.
We're closing in. We are closing in. Once again, folks, the number to call, 822-8648, 822-8648, if you'd like to donate to the third annual CITR funding drive. We have already set a record because I think we got over 13 2 years ago, right? And last year we were like 9-something.
Yeah, last year wasn't as good.
Yeah, this year we're over 14, so give us a call up, folks, and you'll get lots of fun stuff. Mike with Flexure Head is coming on after me. How much have you raised, Mike? What are you at?
What are you at? Over $100.
Ah.
But it's a good. We had one person come in.
Yeah, I heard.
$101.90.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And they're coming in to co-host a show with me as their.
They're
prize.
Coming in today as the prize. That's a good prize.
We're
I should have thought of that. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
For the man.
Too much for the man. He couldn't make it.
So he's leaving the life he's come to know.
Ooh. He said he's going.
Said he's going back to find.
Going back to find.
Ooh. What's left of this world? The world he left behind. Not so long.
Superstar, but he didn't get far.
But he still found out the hard way.